Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise interviews from Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia. You're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews. Welcome to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship. Listen to interviews with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And now, welcome your host, Marty McDermott, and Franchise Interviews.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future, and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know, the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Hi, this is Connie McDermott, Administrative Assistant for Franchise Interviews, LLC, and you're listening to Franchise Interviews.
Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise Interviews, where we're asking the franchisepreneur who owns one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, with my co-host, Don Johnson. And if you've ever dreamed about owning your own business, then you've come to the right place. We have a great show this morning. Today we're meeting with franchise consultant Tom Scarta. And Tom Scarta is a regular guy who left the 9-to-5 world, promise of a pension, and a gold watch to explore his desire to follow his dreams to become an entrepreneur. If you're having a problem deciding if franchising is for you or how to make the transition from a 9-to-5 workday to owning your own destiny, Tom is certainly the person to talk to. Learning about Tom's firsthand experience with franchising will give you an insight into how you can realize your dreams too. And that's coming up in segment 2 of Franchise Interviews. Our first segment today is being brought to you by Franchise Interviews LLC, and Franchise Interviews gives you an up-close and behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, Franchise Interviews, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get inside tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear and read interviews with franchisors, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and franchise attorneys. And our monthly franchise newsletter, which is a must-read for anyone looking to buy a franchise. And don't forget to check out our new podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. And Don, welcome back to another article. Well, today, as we were saying earlier, Don, we have a great show. We're meeting with franchise consultant Tom Scarta. And Tom is, as we were mentioning, a regular guy who left the 9-to-5 world, promise of a pension and a gold watch to explore his desire to follow his dreams to be an entrepreneur. And for our listeners, if you're having a problem deciding if franchising is for you or how to make the transition from a 9-to-5 workday to owning your own destiny, Tom is certainly the person that you want to talk to. So, good, Tom. Tom, joining us is my co-host, Don Johnson, and I know you wanted to say hi, to Tom, Don.
Yeah, Tom, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. Hope your summer's going well. And do you always like being referred to as just a regular guy?
Hey, Don, yeah. Well, thanks for having me on, first of all. It's an honor, and it's a pleasure.
Thanks, Tom.
And, yeah, this is great.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, Tom, we always like to start off asking our guests, where you're calling from today?
I'm in Long Island, as they
you
say.
You are in Long Island. I detected a little New York accent there.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
I was born and raised in New York City in Brooklyn.
Oh, great.
And we're out here on Long Island with the kids, and
that's great.
Putting them through the suburban education system, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, Don and I both have roots from Brooklyn as well. I was born in Brooklyn, Tom. And Don, your dad is from Brooklyn, isn't he?
Right. Exactly. You know? Yeah, he grew up in Brooklyn on Flatbush Avenue and been telling us stories our whole lives.
Yeah, yeah. You know, most of my family is still there, Tom. And, you know, they reminded me a lot of your story, you know, because most of them work for the city, you know, and the reason that they work for the city is the pension, you know, as you said, you know. And they're not very I hope they're not listening because they'll kill me, but they're not very inspired, I think, you know, with their jobs, you know. So, you know, we really appreciated your story, you know. One of the questions we're excited to ask you, Tom, is how did you get involved in franchising?
Well, going back to the civil service mentality, I was working for New York City Transit Subway System for about 13 years, and I kind of got a little fed up with the bureaucracy and the nonsense and that non-ambition that civil
right.
servants typically have.
Yes.
I had an entrepreneurial itch. You know, I could tell you all sorts of stories about people saying, no, you got to do things a transit way, you know, slow down.
Right.
Well, don't walk so fast, you know, it's so funny.
Exactly.
Right.
And so this frustrated me, and I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, didn't know how, didn't know where to start, and so I contacted a consulting firm that matched me with a smoothie company, and I took the plunge. My whole family, my friends were beside themselves. They said, you know, you're leaving this perfect position with the promise of a pension, and, you know, you could be, you know, making, you know, $40,000 a year in a pension when you retire, and
exactly.
that would just really frustrate me. And I said, you know what, I want to make $40,000 a minute. How about that?
There you go.
That's especially in Long Island. It's an exaggeration, but just like really anywhere in the country, but especially certain parts like New York, make a certain amount to have a decent living.
Right, right. Well, just the electric rate on Long Island is the highest rate in the country outside of Hawaii.
I do believe it, actually. Yeah, and you were very successful at franchising. Too, Tom. I mean, as Don and I were reading your bio earlier on in the show, I saw that you were Maui Wowie's franchisee of the year, you know, and what did you attribute all that to, all that success with that franchise?
And to put it in New York terms, I say it was chutzpah. I wanted to make something successful, and first of all, I believe because I used a consulting firm, they matched me so well, it fit all my skills, so I hit the ground running, but I always said I don't care what happens. I'm going to sell smoothies. I don't care if it's on the corner of 42nd and 8th. I'm selling.
Right.
You know, I'll pull up the cart and I'm going to sell. And that's it. Was just having that kind of, blind ambition. Just I knew
like that
I
whole attitude. Like failure is not an option. Is really that whole.
Right.
He had a lot of drive. Starting up that business.
Right. You have to have the drive. In 2000, no one knew what smoothies were in New York, really. There was no one selling smoothies. Now I don't know what the numbers are. It's in a multi-billion dollar category these days.
Right.
Everybody's getting into smoothies from Starbucks to, you know, Dunkin' Donuts and all the way down the road. But back then, nobody knew it. And people were saying, you know, my dad, for instance, the quintessential former New York City cop, said, you know, nobody's going to buy frozen drinks in New York.
Right.
That's crazy.
Right.
And what was funny is that we ended up getting a spot. It was like a blessing from God that we got into the Jacob Javits Convention Center in Manhattan.
Wow.
Their strong season is the winter. And if you ever walked around the convention center, which I know all of you guys have,
it
gets real dry,
right.
You know, from the ventilation system. So people were buying smoothies like mad.
Wow.
And that's really what put us in our very first year into the number one spot in gross numbers out of 200 units.
That's fantastic. Were you surprised, Tom, that that's what you were matched up with, you know, when you were going through the whole franchise consulting process, that they came back to you and said, you know what, you would do very well with this type of franchise?
I wasn't that surprised. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like... I was very comfortable with it, actually.
Right,
it just seemed like the right thing, but it was also explained to me that it was, you know, we're not going to come back to you with a lot of things that you know of, because
right.
if you know of them, that means they're already in your neighborhood and you're not going to be able to open up that concept.
That's true. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And yeah, I think it's real interesting, Tom, you know, and what you're doing now, and you went through the whole process yourself, so I guess that's why you're having success now with Fran Choice, because you saw it, you know, worked for yourself. Like, even though, you know, the failure was not an option, I mean, you must have had, I mean, you know, just starting up a new business. It was your first time owning a business when you start up the Maui Wowie, right?
That's correct, yes.
So what was going through your, you know, thought process then? I guess you were just, you had some peace of mind knowing you were working with a specialist in franchising, which gave you some confidence, and, you know, starting up a business maybe wasn't as, you know, nervous to you because of that. Is that was, you know, the whole mindset, you know, going in, Tom?
Yeah, and it's a coincidence. I don't know if, you know, one of your former interviewees, Carol Mercurio, who I
mm-hmm.
think you know, was actually my consultant back in 2000.
Oh, wow.
She's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very, very cool. She helped me out greatly in this process and said, you know, really, really set me up to have my mindset in the right frame of mind, I guess. And we, you know, dove into the investigation process. But also the franchise company was very helpful. They were very forthcoming with their information, really told us what it was going to be all about, and said to us, you know, this is not signing a franchise agreement and then becoming a millionaire. You know, this, like a lot of people join a gym, they think just by signing the gym agreement they're going to lose weight. You got to go to the gym. You got to
right.
work
right.
You got
to. She's very good in you know, getting that information across to you. She probably taught you a few new things about yourself you didn't know because of
right.
her, you know, analysis and depth that, you know, your company goes into when you're speaking to a prospect, right?
Exactly. It was a soul-searching experience. I use that phrase every day. I experienced it myself, and now I take my candidates through that same soul-searching experience where, you know, a lot of people say, well, you know, I love donuts. Let me open up a donut franchise. That's just
yeah.
a silly thing to do. That's not a
right.
good business decision. Or somebody,
right.
somebody will say, you know, there is no whatever in my neighborhood, so I think I should open one. And you should be buying a franchise based on what's good for you, not for the neighborhood.
Right.
True.
Yeah, so maybe talk about, Tom, what types of characteristics you think make a good franchisee. I mean, you go through that whole process. You probably know pretty quickly whether someone's a pretty good match or not. But what are some of the top characteristics that make people successful?
Well, there are two very delineating points. Either you're an extrovert or an introvert. And just because you're an introvert doesn't mean that you're not a good franchisee. It just means that you may not want to be the kind of guy who's out drumming up your own business, and you might want something where it's more back office for you. So
right.
first we kind of figure that out. But you have to have a lot of self-confidence. You have to be able to know that you can be a success. And people don't realize, even if they're, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old in a corporate job, they're successful to where they're at.
Right.
And then they have to open up their comfort zone and get to the next level. A lot of people are afraid of that. So you have to be a little bit fearless,
right.
Be willing to take a leap of faith and know that you can do it, because you'll never find a concept that you're 100% in love with. There's always a little something missing. And I kind of use the analogy of when you're buying a house. You might find the perfect house in the perfect neighborhood, but there's probably something wrong. You might not have the right windows that you want or whatever. And you have to learn to live with it, get into it, and then fix it and work with it.
Right.
So you have to do that. But as far as characteristics go, it's really the yearning and the want to really make a change for your future. And not everybody's cut out to be a franchisee or a business owner. And, you know, we do need great people running, you know, great civil service systems or what have you. But, you know, for me personally, I could just speak from personal experience. I was successful in transit. I mean, I moved very quickly up the line, but then realized that, you know, when I looked at the vice president and the president of transit, they weren't living in the houses I wanted to live in or driving the cars I wanted to drive.
Right.
But business owners were. So if you got that drive, you can do it. And, of course, that's not for everybody. People are sometimes fine with a very simple lifestyle, and that's great. But I think you need to have the drive, and more than that, you need to have the vision, and you need to be a goal setter. You need to know what your goals are.
That's a good point, knowing what the goal is. Because that's what I was just going to ask you, Tom. What's mostly motivating people who utilize your services today? I mean, obviously, probably a common answer is they want the freedom, be on their own. I mean, is it making more money? Is it spending more time with the family? What are some of the big, motivation, things that's going on now?
Well, unfortunately, right now, it's a lot of people just plainly getting laid off and can't get a job that was paying the same thing.
Right.
So that is not a good reason, really, to get into business. You really need, if you really want to be have that steady paycheck and you're comfortable with that, you really need to find a job, even if it's for less money. But aside from that, yes, it's controlling your own destiny, building, a good equity in a business to retire from.
Yeah.
And, a lot of people say, well, I need to make $100,000 a year. And, first year, there's not too many businesses that you'll put $100,000 in your pocket. But
right.
You need to look at a business from an objective standpoint in that there's so many advantages to owning a business that are legal tax write-offs. So if you're running your cell phone through your business, that needs to come off and go into your bottom line, actually. So a lot of folks will tell you, I didn't make any money the first year. But in fact, when you look at the stuff that they were legally able to write off,
right,
they actually make $50,000. And the guy who made $100,000 after taxes, blah, 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 he really only took home $65,000 or $70,000. So it's not that far off when
right.
you really think about it. And then in 3 years, the guy who started a business and followed the system now has a business that's worth $1 million, let's say, that he invested $100,000 into. And the guy who has $100,000 a job with a five-year increase every year is now making $113,000 and has nothing to show for it.
Right.
So when you really think about it, you're really buying equity and building equity. The same reason why probably both you, Marty and Don, have purchased houses.
Right.
It's much easier to just rent an apartment. You can live anywhere you want.
True.
But at the end of the day, you don't own anything.
True.
Right. Good point.
That's an interesting point. Tom, what are some of the services provided by your company? I know you do a lot of different things. You do a lot of public speaking on a lot of great topics, which Don and I would like to have you come back on the show eventually and talk about things like motivation. What are some of the services that you actually do?
As far as franchise, do you mean? Or
yeah, as far as franchise, and I guess anything in general that our listeners might be interested in.
Well, in the world of franchise, I help people, obviously find the right franchise based on their skills and personality.
Right.
One of the biggest things is to get them to understand themselves and really kind of face their fears. So whether it's in franchising or if I'm just working with a company doing, a keynote speech,
mm-hmm.
it's trying to get people to understand that the thoughts that they were brought up with are maybe not the best ideas to have going forward to help them expand themselves in their career or in their business or what have you.
Right.
So I work a lot with fear and anxiety and trying to unwind for people their everything that, their teachers and preachers and parents have told us
right.
because they love us, but they're scared for us. They're afraid
right.
that we're, everything is coming from the perspective of loss.
Exactly.
Don't lose this, don't lose that. But if you can get past not worrying about loss and look at look at gain and mm-hmm. what you could have instead of what you might lose,
right.
your whole life turns around.
Absolutely.
That's the whole is the glass half full or half empty
right.
scenario, I guess.
Well, It is that, but we are, all of us are, it's so beat into our heads every day, my goodness, be careful. What did your mom always say to you when you left your house every day on the way to school? Be careful.
Be careful, yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be better if mom said, be bold, learn something, have fun?
That's true, yeah. And did you have that experience, Tom? Is that what happened to you, I guess, growing up as a kid, coming from, the Northeast or that background?
Yeah, especially with my dad being a cop and my
right.
wife also. My wife was a New York City police sergeant, just retired last year. So
wow.
I grew up with this whole police mentality where
right.
the world is really dangerous. Be careful. Look over your shoulder. Every corner, you don't know what you're going to run into. And then you take that into your life whether it's, you know, when you get into business and it's, oh my goodness, who's going to try to rip me off? You know,
right.
Who's stealing from me? Who's doing this? You know, and you spend your days worrying instead of saying, how can I get my business to the next level?
That's interesting. But I suspect you're different with your children. I know you have two kids, you know,
yeah.
So you have a different philosophy than your parents had, you know, and I guess Don and I will have different philosophies with our kids as well, you know, than what our parents taught us, you know. So it is. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, my daughter starts college in 7 days from
today.
Wow,
congratulations. That's fantastic. It's,
so are you
going
to tell her, Tom, to be careful as you drop her off? And what are you going to say to her as you're dropping her off at the campus?
No, I'm going to tell her to be bold. Have fun.
Exactly.
You know, do what you want. Experience life.
Right.
And don't hurt anyone. That's all.
Exactly.
You know, we're meant to be. We're put on this planet to experience life,
mm-hmm.
and so many people are afraid to actually experience life, and they don't. You know, let me just get a job. Let me you know collect this little nest egg so I can
right.
retire someday to Florida, and that might be good for some people, but it's, you know,
not
there's so
everybody.
Much more, and you know, and it's kind of goes back to the theory of relativity, you know. God kind of made this universe to experience himself as God.
Right.
And you got to know what you're not to know who you are. And that's what we'll talk about. I think next time we're on the show, we'll get real
Absolutely.
Deep about how to experience life and why
yeah,
we're
it's
here.
A great topic, yeah.
And how to reach your potential. And I guess you made that, you know, decision at some time. You just don't want to settle for, say, being average, so to speak.
Right,
and,
right. And
yeah. And I guess your parents, like many of our parents, you know, being more on the conservative side, but you saw
mm-hmm.
yourself as doing, you know, bigger and better things, I guess, and just wanted to reach your own potential. And I guess, obviously, you know, you're in the perfect position for what you're doing right now, because obviously,
right.
besides educating people on which franchise system might be a right fit, I mean, you know, what you're doing, obviously, is also motivating people, trying to give them the confidence that they could do it if you
mm-hmm.
feel that they'll be good, you know, for franchising. So,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I probably imagine this is what makes you a great consultant too, Tom, is because you have that, you know, background, you know, to say as you, you know, in your bio like a regular guy, you know, I think people probably relate to you maybe a little better than some other consultants, you know, that may be out there.
Well, that is probably true, and I do want to say that that's probably one of my strong points, which makes me, you know, a leader within the franchise organization.
Right.
But I love to, you know, disseminate to my colleagues how great they can be too, and use
right.
their experience to make them the perfect consultant for their candidates as well.
Exactly.
I think that there's a lot to be said for my experience, as you know, what you said earlier, as a regular guy,
mm-hmm.
I could relate to a candidate and I can relate to an audience. Because I never walked on the moon, I never played in a Super Bowl, I never drove a race car,
right.
but I left the corporate environment to follow my dreams, and it's been a success. I mean, I was semi-retired at 41 years old, so there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, no, it's very inspirational.
People love those stories.
Oh, absolutely.
Marty and I read those on our shows a lot. We'll tell a story about a friend. We've had franchisees on the show, Tom, and they told us about their success, what they've gone through, and
yeah.
you know, we'll be having plenty of more of those shows.
Yeah, it's very inspirational.
Yeah, I think it'll be great for you guys to do that kind of stuff because
– Right.
And so what – you know, and it makes me ask the question which you asked before, what separates the guy who does great and the guy who doesn't do great? And I think it's just a vision of what you want to do.
It's true. Right, seeing the big picture, and yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, you're probably a big believer. Excuse me, Marty. I was just going to ask Tom, big believer in goals and being driven. And we've talked to people where that's so important
mm-hmm.
to have goals and write them down and you know, follow a system. I guess whatever system you have, to just stay the course, never give up, never be satisfied. I guess that's all the stuff you're a big believer in, of course.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
A goal is just a dream with a date on it. So, you know, dream big, put a date on it. I tell my candidates all the time. You know, people say to me, "Well, I want financial freedom. You know, I want to be financially independent." Okay, what does that really mean to you?
Right.
Well, that means, you know, I want to have a house, you know, in the Bahamas. I want to have a tiki hut in my yard, you know, looking over the ocean. So, okay, when do you want to do that by?
Exactly.
We can do that by, you know, do it by 2015. Put a date on it now, so at least you know what you're working toward. And I think that makes a big difference. And there's, I'm not going to get into all of it now, but there's been studies that people who have written down their goals succeed and meet those goals 98% of the time, as opposed to those who don't write down their goals.
Yeah, it really is incredible. Something so simple as just taking a pen to the paper, Tom, you know, and just putting it down, you know. And we had Michael Gerber on our show, actually, it's twice, right, Don, at this point? And he has a similar concept, Tom. He's created this whole thing. It's called In the Dreaming Room, you know, and you actually go into this room for 2 days, and you just, he teaches you to dream big, as you were just saying. And it sounds a lot like Michael Gerber as you were talking, you know. And what it does is, I think it excites you, you know. I mean, knowing that all these wonderful things are going to happen to you, you know. So it is so important.
It's so funny. I have Michael's latest book on my desk right now, The E-Myth Mastery, with a picture of both of us together at a conference that we did.
Wow. He's fantastic, isn't he? He's just he's really wonderful.
Man, I love to hear him speak because he is no holds barred, man. He is out
there.
He
is. He'll say anything on the show, too. He's just, he really is. He's something. I think, you know, when we had him on the show, I think Don and I both walked away inspired for, was it several weeks, Don, probably? Just pumped up just after talking.
Oh, yeah. I'm Mr. Salesman on high octane for the next week at least.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I just want to ask you, Tom, in a down economy, let's see, you see more people investing in some of the smaller franchises as opposed to, you know, your average investment times, type of franchise. Is that what's been going on? You've seen more of the smaller investments?
Absolutely, and that's what I've been trying to bring to the table for my candidates. Stuff that's, you know, service-based, you're in for $100,000 or less, you hit the ground running cash flow almost immediately after you get out of training. That is the kind of stuff that's making sense right now. And people say, so, you know, what does that mean, you know, recession-resistant, technology-resistant? You think about, you know, glass replacement. You know, if your windshield is cracked on your car, how can you get an inspection sticker when the time is up? You got to get it replaced. It doesn't matter how much cash you have. You're going to put it on a credit card. That's recession-proof business.
Right.
That's interesting, yeah.
What's been the most interesting thing that's happened to you, Tom, since getting into all this, the consulting? Has there been one story that stands out? I'm sure there's a lot of them, but that was a tough question, by the way, for our guest.
Yeah.
You know, to think of one thing that, you know, is the most interesting thing.
That is a tough question. I think probably just looking back about where I was and then where I've come in eight short years.
Right.
I get one of the most outstanding things that I've done was the opportunity to walk on fire with some motivational speaker guys.
Wow, that's
really,
something, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I have pictures of it in my office. And
so like Anthony Robbins kind of thing?
Yeah,
that's amazing. It's and he's great, too. He had this great phrase. I remember reading one of his books, Tom, and he said that most people overestimate what they can do in a year and underestimate what they can do in 10 years. And as you said, that it kind of made me think of Anthony Robbins. You know, it sounds very similar, you know, and what you've accomplished in 8 years is really quite incredible, you know, so it's living proof, you know, fantastic.
What's
right,
your
I mean,
thoughts, Tom, on the growth of franchising right now? And, you know, Marty and I on the show, we go over a lot of statistics and the economy being down and a lot of different industries down and franchising as a whole, the numbers are up, but what's your thoughts on it?
Well, it's, you know, I tell my candidates all the time, you know, there's more than 3,000 franchise concepts in spanning 75
right.
different industries. That's so right. You can get into something you would never thought of in a million years, but let's make sure that it makes sense, you know, for you. And there's a lot of very cool stuff. There's a lot of great stuff. But I try to tell people not to get involved or not think about the stuff that is, you know, fancy schmancy and here today, gone tomorrow. So the expansiveness of the industry is encouraging. When I was at the, you know, IFA conference and I'm listening to Mr. Shea talk about how, you know, the economic impact of franchising in a nation is astronomical. We're responsible for 10% of the, you know, economic output in the United States. I mean, that is incredible numbers when you think about it. So I'm encouraged to buy it. I think that it makes sense. I don't know if you guys have talked about it yet, but like in California, they're trying to discourage franchises from opening up in L.A. County and downtown Los Angeles. I think this is something that needs to be spoken about very quickly because I think it really will hurt people that use the services in the area. I think it's very narrow-minded thinking. So as we're expanding, you know, globally, we're shrinking in little markets and as important as L.A., and I just heard that New York is kind of talking about the same thing now.
Wow.
After L.A. has passed this law where you can't open a fast food franchise in L.A. proper.
That's scary,
so, It's kind of silly and short of saying stupid, but
right, sure.
I'm surprised that law even passed.
I
just don't understand it. It's against what America is for.
And it's just, you know, people don't understand franchising and the government, you know, think, oh, you know, it's not the right thing to do. It's, you know, give the small entrepreneur a chance. And the fact of the matter is the mom and pop entrepreneur ends up failing more often than not, and the franchise doesn't. So you got to wake up and, you know, look at the statistics
here.
That's
right, exactly.
Give people a fair chance, yeah.
Yeah.
What are your plans
for
the
franchise do? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Don, go ahead.
I was just going to ask, what does franchise do to approve a franchise system? I mean, you work with, you know, very successful franchises, large and small investment. What's the process that'll be an approved concept with your company, Tom?
Well, I don't do that process. That's done with the home office in Minneapolis, but I know it's a six-month type of process that a franchisor has to go through. And, you know, we look for things such as things that the layman wouldn't know to look for. Like we would like to see at least one franchise support person in the home office for every seven or so in the field. Seven or so franchisees in the field. So we want to make sure that, you know, you got great support, great training, you know, no litigation in the FDD.
Mm-hmm.
We want to know that there's a good sales team and they can handle the onslaught of candidates that we're going to throw at them. That's a big thing. We do secret shopping. We'll do validation calls. We'll secretly call to franchise owners, as I encourage all my candidates to do as well through the process, and you know, get the franchisee on the phone and ask very pointed questions about the support they're receiving and are they getting the support that the franchisor says they're going to give in their, you know, glossy brochures.
Right, so there's a whole lot involved there, so that when it is an approved concept, you're speaking to a client or potential franchisee, there's really no negatives. Except for maybe it might be a newer system. Is there a certain amount of franchisees that you want in the system before you might work with that franchise?
We do want to see certain numbers, but every once in a while we will take on something that's brand spanking new, but it's because of the management team that is in that concept that has taken it on. And, you know, franchising is a small industry, so we know who's who and who is really you know, running the concept. And it's funny because a lot of people boast that they have, you know, the CEO of some big Fortune 500 company come over and take a franchise and run the franchise. And that's we don't see that as a great thing, or at least I don't. I think that you want somebody from the franchise industry who has taken, you know, a fledgling concept and grew it into hundreds of units, and now they're going on to the next to do the same. So we put a lot of weight behind who's running the franchise.
That's great.
Good. That was a very good question, wasn't it, Tom?
It was a good question. Tom, we have about 30 seconds. What's the best way to get more information on your services? I know you have a couple of different websites and phone numbers. And
I'll give you a phone number. It's a toll-free number, which is 866-545-6191. Or my personal website is tomscarda.com. That's TOMSCARD as in David A.com. And I could be contacted there for any type of questions, whether franchised or not.
Okay, that's fantastic. And we actually have a link up on our show page as well for that too, Tom, so our listeners can actually click that and get more information right away. And I want to thank you again, Tom. You definitely motivated Don and I this morning. You know, we were both excited to finally have you on the show. You know, we've been plugging the show for a while, and we definitely would love to have you back in the very near future.
Well, I'm sure, Tom, you might write a book in the future maybe,
yeah.
Tom, right?
I have already put pen to paper.
Wow, that's
wow,
fantastic.
Okay, good.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Franchise interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Welcome to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship. Listen to interviews with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts, and attorneys. And now, welcome your host, Marty McDermott, and Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 8 years we've been asking the franchisepreneurs of one-on-one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott, and I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and we have a great show today. We're meeting with certified franchise expert, franchise author, and consultant Tom Scarta. And Tom's going to talk about his recent book, The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. I'm going to talk to Tom about that in just a moment on Franchise Interviews. So stick around because we have a great show.
Are you one of those special people who are willing to go after your dreams and goals? Are you ready to fulfill that dream of owning your own business with the security of a proven brand, the opportunity to take control of your future and own a Rita's Italian Ice franchise is within your reach?
Rita's is seeking success-oriented individuals who are ready to make a change in their life, and Rita's offers unparalleled training and support to assure your success. And did you know the frozen treat industry is a recession-proof industry, and there are Rita's in 23 states currently with 540 stores open. Rita's Italian Ice has been around for 25 years and is listed as a top-performing franchise by the Wall Street Journal.
Now here's the really good part. Rita's Italian Ice is a unique and amazing taste treat. It's smoother than a snow cone, and it combines ice with real fresh fruit. The real fruit adds dramatically to the taste, and it comes in over 40 flavors. The ice and fruit are mixed on site and made fresh daily, and it is delicious.
You'll want to know more about this exciting and successful franchise opportunity. Go to www.ownaritas.com and get all your questions answered. That's www.ownaritas.com to take control of your dreams and future today. You don't want to wait any longer to be a part of this adventure. www.ownaritas.com.
Franchisers, are you looking to reach aspiring entrepreneurs looking to buy a franchise? Are you looking to reach a highly educated audience on franchising? For over 8 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts and attorneys, and our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919. Franchise Interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to a very special edition of Franchise Interviews, where for over 8 years, we've been asking the franchisepreneurs of one-on-one. I'm your host, Marty McDermott. I'm the president of Franchise Interviews, and as we were saying earlier, we have a great show today. We're meeting with certified franchise expert, franchise author, and consultant, Tom Scarta. Tom's going to talk about his most recent book, The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. Hey, Tom, how you doing? Welcome back to the show.
Hey, Marty, how are you?
I'm doing well, Tom. You know, I didn't realize, Tom, the last time we actually had you on the show, it was about 7 years ago, and it was funny, I was listening to the show this morning, and at that time, I don't know if you know this, you just started writing the book, which is done today, so that's fantastic. Congratulations on all that.
Well, thank you, yeah. It was 7 years in the making, which is kind of insane, but that's the way it happens sometimes.
Which is great, though, you know, that you put all that time, you know, and effort into the book, you know, and I mean, I guess, you know, this is, you know, one of my dreams is to one day, of course, you know, write a book. I mean, what did it feel like when it was finally done, Tom?
You can't describe it. It's kind of like, you know, I guess it's kind of like having a baby or something.
Sure.
It's exuberating, exciting, but it's a little bit scary too, because you're really, you know, you're putting yourself out there, and you feel like you never feel like it's ready,
and
I think in my heart of hearts this is probably not totally ready. I'll probably, you know, I'll do a second edition or something.
Right,
but,
volume two.
It's just, but it was exhilarating. It's, you know, kind of walking on water. It makes me feel like it's just great.
Yeah,
walking
of course.
On cloud. It's like,
no, that's fantastic. And, you know, when we had you on the show, too, you know, this is our last show for the 2014. And, you know, every year we, you know, we try to put, like, a lot of thought in, to have some type of, like, motivational speaker, someone like yourself, you know. So I'm really happy to have you on the show today. We would like to ask our guest, where are you calling from this morning, Tom?
I'm based in Long Island, New York.
Okay, fantastic. I would say our guest could probably detect a little New York accent, right?
Well, I was going to say Long Island, but, you know. I was born and raised in Brooklyn, right? I can't shake that accent.
Most people can't. I know. Well, it's just what, you know, my family, we got out of Brooklyn, you know, kind of early, you know, but we always went back to it. Most of my family still is in Brooklyn, you know, so I was mentioning every time I talk to you, I feel like I'm talking to or speaking to one of my cousins, you know, so it's fantastic. It reminds me a lot of being home again, you know. So you have a great story. I mean, one of the things, you know, I've done 400 of these interviews, and your interview that I did with you 7 years ago, it really stood out because it was a great story. Maybe you could talk a little bit, you know, about how you got involved in franchising and what were you doing before that, you know, because I think that's part of the whole appeal of the story.
Yeah, I agree, and thank you for saying that. You know, like most franchisees, it's, you know, owning a franchise is a second career. You know, unless you inherit the franchise, it's very rare that somebody, like, gets out of college and gets a franchise.
Right.
That's a rarity. So it's usually a second career. And for me, I was working for the New York City subway system. Most of my adult life. I was there for 13 years. I started out as a subway conductor, believe it or not, opening and closing doors. And if you ever rode in the New York City subway, I'm the person you couldn't understand on the intercom.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. It's kind of what we were known for back then. Of course, now they're computerized audio.
Right.
But I worked my way up the line, you know, went to train dispatcher, and I got into then training conductors and motormen and different things like that. Had all sorts of cool special assignments. Then I got a job working for the Long Island Railroad, running their customer communications department and their print shop, and I was in charge of all communications, written and verbal. And I was doing just fine, but there was something itching. I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know how. And I knew nothing about business. I was a government worker, and I found FranChoice, the company I work with. And what we do is match people with franchise opportunities based on skills and personality, kind of like the eHarmony of business is what I like to call it.
Right, sure.
And I contacted the company FranChoice, and they matched me to a smoothie franchise. And in 2000, my wife and I decided to buy it and build it, and we had some great locations. Within 4.5 years, I was blessed enough to be able to sell it, and I semi-retired at 41 years old. So it was kind of a super success story, kind of the American dream. And I like to say, you know, two things on that. One is I don't say that to impress people, but to impress upon people that, you know, if I could do it and follow the American dream as a government worker, I mean, anybody can. You just got to pick the right business for you, and you got to work it. It's not, you know, I worked my butt off. It was not easy.
Right.
But it's your thing. You love it. You wake up and you make it happen every day, and that was motivating. And I think that's important to understand, is that anybody could do it. And also the second thing I want to say is that money's subjective. So I semi-retired, but I was a government worker. I wasn't making millions as a government worker. So I was able to, you know, easily replace my salary, and it worked out beautifully for my family and I.
You're very successful in franchising too, Tom. You know, I mean, in the time that you were doing it, I mean, what do you attribute that to? Was it having that match? You know, I mean, because again, you did go the franchise consultant route, and you know, in many cases, you know, they do a very good job as far as like matching you with your personality. Was that part of the whole success of you doing so well in franchising?
You know, that's a great question. Of course, people ask me that all the time, and so yes, it is. Part of it is the match.
Yeah.
Part of it is the company and the support that you get from the company.
Mm.
And then that's 50% of it, or 49% of it. 51% of it is your attitude toward your business.
Wow.
And, you know, people are like, you know, I think positive. No.
Right.
You know, it's difficult to think positive when you're having a bad day or even a bad month.
Yeah.
So that's important. You got to go in with a good attitude. I ended up reading like every self-development, self-help book out there during those years.
Right. It was interesting, too. I remember, I mean, it was when you went into this, too, you know, this is a long time ago, but you did have that. I remember you saying that you had that attitude that, you know, you didn't care if your location was on a street corner or you happened to end up in a spectacular location, you know, which is really that iconic location, you know, we know as the Jacob Javits Center. You know, but it sounded like that positivity, though. I mean, it brought probably about a lot of great things for you, I suspect.
Yeah, and that's kind of it. You got to go in and, you know, shoot for the stars. And, you know, as they say, if you miss, at least you hit the moon. I went in there with faith and courage that I can make it happen. And failure was not an option. And you know, when you do that, that's kind of like what my book talks about is when you choose that uncertainty and take that chance, magical things happen, and the universe or God or whatever you want to call it sends people your way, sends circumstances your way to positively move you in a direction to help the world. And, you know, buying a franchise is not helping the world, but in a way it has a very large ripple effect. And that's one thing that I just want to share real quickly, Marty, if you don't mind. What people don't understand, you buy a franchise and it's for you and your family, yes.
Right.
But the average franchise will employ 10 people directly and 10 people indirectly, meaning, you know, the guy that drives the truck, right? So you're creating jobs. You're creating a tax base, right? So the guy who's working for you now is able to go and, you know, buy something for his family, and that money goes to that store owner, and that store owner makes money and is able to go out and buy a car, and then that money goes to, you know, the car manufacturer. So it's like a big ripple effect.
Right.
And that's why the universe comes to someone's aid, because you're doing even so much more than you realize when you start up a business.
That's an interesting stat, Tom. I've never, you know, in all the years I've been doing the show, and it does make sense, you know, that one franchise business owner, you know, impacts 10 people directly and 10 indirectly, and that does. It makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? I mean, that, you know, and I suspect a lot of people don't see it that way, you know, is that, you know, franchising certainly does create jobs, and it's so important to the United States economy, isn't it?
Right. I mean, if you listen to the, if you read up on the International Franchise Association stuff on their website, franchise.org, that there's all sorts of interesting facts, and they say the number is somewhere around 18 million people are employed by a franchise operation somewhere in the United States.
That's amazing, isn't it? When you hear that number, 18 million. I mean, it's been a phenomenal number.
They say it's second only to the U.S. military.
That's incredible, isn't it?
It really is. And it's funny because sometimes I scratch my head because, once a week I run into somebody who says, franchising is a scam. It doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah, of course, right. How could it have gotten this far, and made this type of impact in the United States, if it was a scam, it's just not possible. What always fascinated me about your story is I think it kind of reminded me, I think you and I came from similar backgrounds, where I came from a family that was very, very conservative. My mom wanted me to work for the government or the post office or something that had that pension, was that part of, writing the book as well? Because I know that you come from a background where I think your father was, I think he was a police officer, and I think even your wife was a police officer as well, wasn't she? So you probably seem to have been surrounded by that conservatism, not really taking a chance. And, was that part of the whole thing of writing the book as well? I mean, the title was great as well, The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. Was that part of the whole thing?
It really was, because it took me, years to kind of unsaddle myself with the at least attitude is what I call it.
Right.
At least I got a job, right? And
sure.
I often tell a story, like when I'm a lot of times I do a lot of public speaking and I speak at franchise conventions all over the country for all different companies and stuff.
Yeah.
And you probably saw me at one of the IFA shows. We definitely saw each other a few times. I know that.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I'm known for wearing these fancy shirts. And my brother, who's actually a New York City firefighter, said to me, making fun of, it was actually a holiday dinner a couple years ago, and he said, "Hey, do they sell men's clothes where you bought that shirt?" And I was like,
That's
so it's not. And so the reason I bring that up, Marty, is that there was one point in my transit career where an old timer who had been with transit for whatever it was, 30 years or something, said to me, "Hey, you know what, kid, this is a great job.
Yeah.
You'll never have a silk shirt, but you'll always have a shirt."
Mm.
And that stuck with me. And I was like, why can't I have a silk shirt? When I look around at my bosses who I love, I love them at the time, and some of them I still keep in contact with, they weren't kind of living the lifestyle I wanted to live,
mm-hmm.
and business owners were. And that was my real kind of impetus to get off my butt. But in regard to the book, Marty, I think to explain it is, I've been helping people for now, 9.5 years, going on 10 years with Franchoice, helping them to find businesses. And what I find, and you know this from the industry, is that majority of people who look at franchising do not buy a franchise. And the number one reason is fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
So they go, instead of choosing, see, at the end of the process, they're looking at great companies because we vet them. We know who's good, who's not. And you can never deny that the companies are not good when you go down the road at looking at them.
Right.
The choice is not what franchise to buy. The choice is the choice between uncertainty and unhappiness.
That's interesting.
And most people go back to the unhappiness because there's a comfort in that, right? There's,
yeah,
so at least I get a paycheck. At least I know I have a job. At least I can pay my bills. And I got to tell you, if you think you're on this earth to pay your bills, you're always going to have a mild kind of frustration that goes through your life.
It's very powerful, what you said, Tom. We've seen that on the show too. I've heard numbers like at like 1 out of 100 people will say yes to going the franchise alternative, or they'll give some kind of like excuse, like it's not perfect, and I remember you even saying this a long time ago, is there's not really that always that perfect opportunity, I mean there's always I think the analogy you used a long time ago was, even when, you buy a house, there's always going to be something with that house that you can always fix. You know what I mean? So there's never that
perfect
opportunity. And I suspect you get that from a lot of people because they're so terrified of going forward. They're like, well, I don't think this is the perfect opportunity for me. I suspect you probably get that a lot, don't you?
Yeah, and you're right. I think it was in Joe Matthews' great book, Street Smart Franchising,
yeah.
He talks about that. One out of every 100 people don't look at franchising actually buy a franchise. And that the thing for me, Marty, is it makes me sad inside because I
mm-hmm.
talk to these folks
yeah.
that have great backgrounds. They're phenomenal at what they do.
Right.
And they can easily translate their skills into their own business and really
right.
live happily ever after. And they don't. And it's,
yeah.
it's always because of fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm. You use a powerful word, Tom. You know, you used happy, you know. And I think it's interesting that how many people there are out there that are, you know, working day to day and they're just, you know, as you said, they're paying their bills, you know, but they're not happy, are they? You know, and I know a lot of those people who are working for, let's say, the city, and you know, they're going to get their pension at some point, but they just aren't happy. And I can't imagine working 40 years and not being happy. And you wonder, you know, it's really that powerful, and that's why I think your book is so important. You know, the magic of choosing uncertainty is that, you know, you lived it, haven't you? I mean,
yeah.
You know, I'm sure, you know, you've been through all of those things that a lot of your clients
mm-hmm.
certainly have gone through their head, don't they?
Yeah, I've been in their shoes, and that's why I kind of enjoy I love what I do because I'm
yeah.
really able to speak to people on a, you know, a one-to-one basis that, you know, I not only have empathy, I've been there, I've done it, and you know, maybe it's not for everybody, and that's fine. I
right.
get that. Not everybody should buy a franchise, believe me.
Right.
But you know, but when you're there and you're on the cusp and you know it's the 11th hour and you have to make a decision and you run away from it, it's really, really sad. And from, you know, from my perspective, it is, and I think from their perspective, I just read an article last week that said 86% of Americans want to change their job today.
Wow, that's incredible.
And I think it was
86%.
86% of Americans want to change their job today. And probably maybe 1% will, you know, get out of the corporate rat race. A lot of people will change jobs, and
right.
they're going from, you know, one fire to another
mm-hmm.
fire, and they really
exactly.
don't solve anything. But I'll tell you that, you know, a great story that I share with everybody, and I think that it will go very, very well here. If you can imagine for a second, there's these two guys sitting on a porch, like two old hillbillies, right, they're drinking their sarsaparilla and they're rocking in their rocking chairs, and one of them has a hound dog, and the hound dog's sitting on the floor, and every once in a while that hound dog lets out a yelp.
Yeah.
So one of these guys, one guy says to the other guy with the dog, what's wrong with your dog? And he said, nothing's wrong with the dog. So he said, well, why does he yelp like that?
Yeah.
And he said, oh, he's laying on a nail. And he said, well, why doesn't he get off the nail? And he said, well, I guess it just doesn't hurt bad enough.
Wow. That's a great analogy. We're going to have to use it. We have this great quotes in franchising podcasts. We're going to have to put that one in there. I haven't heard you tell that story, but I think that's, I mean, that's a great one. I mean, it show, you know, how we're willing to live our lives like that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It frustrates the heck out of me. And, you know, in the book, I give people what I call fuel for change, which are different exercises at the end of a couple of different chapters where you can go through changing your mindset about things.
Yeah.
And you realize after a while, all your stuff, all your baggage in that fear department
right.
essentially comes from your parents and from your upbringing telling you, you know, no, no, no,
right.
don't do that, be careful. And if you lose, you're a loser. And,
yeah.
and that's not the case at all, because when you take a chance and if it doesn't work out for some reason, there's more life
yeah.
lessons in that failure than there is in any success. And I can tell you that directly from my smoothie experience.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, there's so much more to learn when you're trying to climb out of a hole than standing on top of a hill.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it must be interesting. I'm one of those people, as I mentioned, Tom. You know, I mean, my mom is still waiting for me to go apply for the post office. You know, I said I'm going to be 50 years old in 3 years. You know, and I just recently, you know, completed my doctorate degree last year, and I think she's still waiting for me to go work. You know, for the post office. You know, I mean, she just tried to instill that in me as a kid, and maybe that was my reason I went the other direction. You know, I just didn't. It just didn't seem gratifying to me, not to pick on anyone who works for the post office, but I just didn't, I wouldn't have had that. And I love the word you use. It uses this word fuel, you know, and we had the great Michael Gerber on our show. And I know you're a fan of his as well a long time ago. And he used that word once too, you know, is he said, you know, that when, you know, you're doing what you love to do, you have that fuel that makes you, you get up early in the morning and you could stay up late at night, you know, and you don't have that when you're doing something you don't love to do, you know. And I remember when I was working on Madison Avenue, I was working for a particular company, and I hated it. And, you know, Sunday night would come, and I'd be like, oh, my God. I was like, I can't make it through another week. And I didn't have that fuel. I felt tired all the time, you know. So once I quit and I created my own company, I had all this fuel, you know, and I could stay up all night if I wanted to. And I suspect, you know, you had the same experience, didn't you?
Yeah, and that's a great, great, insightful thing that you shared, because it's when you make that kind of change, all that anxiety and fear energy turns into the positive motivation fuel to get you out of bed and make things happen out there.
Yeah.
And I also like what you said, because I agree. I don't put anybody down for working a job. I mean, it's fine.
Yeah.
You
absolutely.
Know, do it. I mean, I loved working for transit. I loved the subway system. I still do to this day.
Yeah.
You know, it's way different than it used to be in regard to the new technology, trains and all that stuff. But, I mean, it was in my blood. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And, you know, if I would have stayed there, I would have been fine and I would have been happy.
Right.
The thing, I didn't change because I was unhappy. I changed because I had a burning desire to do something more. There was something
more.
That was pushing me to do more. And I still, to this day, I can't pinpoint what it is, but there's something driving me. And I feel that, you know, the people talk about destiny, and I don't want to get all esoteric here on the interview, but it's, you know, there's something more out there for people. And you can work your job and still follow your destiny. If it doesn't have to, your destiny sometimes, most of the time, actually doesn't fall around what you do for a living anyway.
That's true. It sounds like you went from being satisfied to very satisfied or extremely satisfied. I mean, that was the change in your life. As you said, you weren't miserable, you know, doing what you were doing. You were fine, you know, but when you made that change, your life seems more enjoyable. You're more happy, and I suspect your family is also happy as well.
Well, that's the word. You just said it. I was happy, and then I went to being enjoyed.
Yeah,
and really enjoy what I do, and there's a big difference between happiness and joyfulness.
Oh yeah,
and so that's, you know, I'm at the joyfulness stage, and it's cool because you're right, the family does like it because I'm around. I'm you know, I have a home office, so that's great. But even when I was doing the smoothie thing, I was around. I was able to go to the, you know, my kids were younger then, but I was able to go to the school plays and. Do all the different things and be around and you know, put the kids on the school bus and be home when they got off the school bus and stuff like that. That was really, really an important thing and for me, and I was able to accomplish that.
And I guess that's part of the process too, Tom, you know, is, you know, when you're meeting with a prospect who is interested in buying a franchise, I mean, I guess you're trying to get to the core of what they're looking to do. You know, I remember one story you're telling on one particular interview of two gentlemen that are working Wall Street and they love golf, you know. So I said, okay, I want to have a golf franchise, you know, and you kind of steered them in another direction saying, you know, you can point them to that direction, but they're not going to be particularly happy because they're not going to make money, you know, and they'd probably end up miserable. So they ended up doing something different, you know, and that's part of the process as well, isn't it?
It really is. You got to be open-minded because they could have gotten into a golf franchise and they would have made money.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, they wouldn't have been happy in my professional judgment, having done it for a long time. They would not have been happy. And you know, a lot of people on a daily basis call me and they have a specific franchise in mind. And I ask them why that franchise.
Yeah.
And they always come up with one of a couple of different reasons. But, you know, they say, well, I love that food. It's so great. It's such a great product. I'm
right.
Like, yeah, you know, it could be the best thing ever. It could be caviar, but,
sure.
You know, if it's you know, way above your price range to get into, it doesn't matter. If it calls for you to be there at night and on the weekends and miss your family events, it's not worth it. So you got to be open-minded and understand that the business model, the day-to-day operation, is more important than what you're selling or what you're serving. Because at the end of the day, that doesn't matter. I mean, obviously, you're not going to sell snow in Alaska, but the product and service has to make sense, and you got to really, you know, understand it and all that good stuff. But it doesn't have to be a passion. And that's where people get messed up. They think that they mess up passion and they confuse passion and hobbies.
Yeah, that's true.
A hobby is not a passion. If your hobby was a passion, you would be a professional, whatever it is. So
absolutely.
And so that's where people get confused, and people end up losing a lot of money when that happens.
I imagine.
Or you might see things that are, you know, I was on vacation, I saw this great, you know, ice cream plate, so I want to do that because there's none where I live, you know.
Right.
You know.
It's true. Yeah, we've heard a lot of those stories. Yeah, it's true, you know. And, I mean, that's why, I mean, your job is really so important, you know, Tom. I mean, what you're doing, you know, you've been doing this a long time. How long have you been a franchise consultant? Has it been, like, it's about 9 or 10 years now?
Yeah, it'll be 10 years in April of 2015.
So obviously you love what you do, you know, and I mean your job is very important. I mean it must be very gratifying for you, I suspect, to, you know, go to, you know, someone opens up a franchise and you get to go to that franchise years later. You just get to see the success that some of those people are having. Must be very, I imagine must be just nothing but rewarding for you or very gratifying.
It's unbelievably rewarding, and
yeah,
a lot of times I hear, you know, I'll go visit somebody or just call them to see how things are going. And they say, inevitably I hear, man, I should have done this 20 years ago.
Wow. That's great. I mean, it is. It's a great job. And I could see why, you know, you know, are so successful, of course, at being, you know, doing what you do, you know. And and again, I look forward to, you know, going over the book and everything like that. And we'll definitely promote the book on the show. The book is called The Magic of Choosing Uncertainty. How can our listeners get a get the book, Tom? Any websites they should go to?
Well, yeah, it's on Amazon. So
okay.
That's, you know, easy. It's on Amazon. It's available on Kindle and all that good stuff. Or you can just go to my website, which is my first name, Tom, at tomscarta.com. So it's Tom and my last name, Scarta, which is S-C-A-R-D as in David, A.com. And you could click through on there.
And it's a great website, by the way, too. I mean, you get to see interviews and things like that, you know, of presentations that you've made in the past, you know, and definitely worth it, you know. So I would certainly recommend to our listeners that they go to tomscarta.com, you know, to get the book. You know, I think it's I think it's fantastic. So I want to congratulate you and thank you again for coming on the show, Tom. I can't think of a better guest to have on for the final show of the year.
Thank you.
I'd like to wish you a happy new year, and I'd like to continue to have you back on the show. I'm not going to wait another 7 or 8 years to get you back on the show. We'll pull you back in a couple of years.
Yeah,
the time sure
not.
Flies by, doesn't it? I mean, it just goes by. I feel like I spoke to you yesterday, but it's been longer than that.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, Marty. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity. And, you know, I'm always here to help, so just keep me in mind.
My pleasure, Tom. And we'll be right back with more franchise interviews.
Franchise interviews. From Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia, you're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews. Franchisers, are you looking to reach aspiring entrepreneurs looking to buy a franchise? Are you looking to reach a highly educated audience on franchising? For over 8 years, Franchise Interviews has been giving an up-close, behind-the-scenes look at franchising and entrepreneurship through our website, franchiseinterviews.com, where you can hear and read interviews as well as get tips from some of the most successful sources in franchising. Our weekly franchise radio show, where each week you get to hear a new interview with franchisers, franchisees, franchise authors, franchise experts and attorneys, and our podcast, Great Quotes in Franchising. For more information, go to franchiseinterviews.com or call us at 610-905-2919. That's 610-905-2919.
Back here on Brand Talks, Go Brand Yourself, the only show on radio where branding gets practical and personal, heard exclusively on WVOX 1460 on your AM dial. So you're out of work, but you got a little bit of a nest egg, or you've been furloughed, and you're thinking about a franchise. What do you do? What do you do? Well, we have today as my guest not only the best franchise expert in the nation, but a dear friend, a wonderful brand. It's with great pleasure that I introduce to you Professor Marty McDermott. Welcome to Brand Talk. And let me not forget this. He is the president of Franchise Interviews. Sorry about that, Marty. Welcome to Brand Talk.
Hi, Dr. Tantillo. How are you? Wow, that was a great introduction.
Well, it's all true. Just ask your wife and ask me, and there you have it.
Well, I tell you, I think my wife fell in love with you after hearing that last show.
Oh,
so I said, I think I better be a little worried.
Yeah, I'm going to have to do pasta over at the McDermott Clan House in Pennsylvania one of these days.
I would love that. That would be fantastic.
And you know, despite this thing about the kid-free zone on airplanes, I love kids, so I don't know what your age of your kids are. You know, I'm not like W.C. Fields, a man who hates dogs and
go.
Kids can't be all bad. But
anyway,
so let me ask you, mm-hmm. what kind of a personality... Okay, well, now since we're on Brand Talk here on WVOX, what kind of a personality brand is best suited for a franchise?
Wow, it's a great question, John. It's, you know, one of the many reasons I love your show is that franchising is it's very much related to branding, isn't it? There's two things that you typically get when you buy a franchise, and one of them is a brand, you know,
mm-hmm.
which is certainly your area of expertise. And the second thing is a system. The challenge in buying a franchise, Dr. Tantillo, is that, you know, today there's over 2,500 brands to choose from in 80 different industries. So the first question is, like, you know, where do you even begin?
Right,
you know,
right.
I mean, it's a little overwhelming. When I got into franchising, I think I got involved in franchising, it was like sometime around 1998, 1999. I think there was about maybe 1,400 different brands to choose from. And here we are today in 2013, and there's 2,500 brands to choose from. So
wow.
It makes it, I think it makes it complicated for the aspiring, I call them a franchrepreneurs. It's
right.
It's like an entrepreneur mm-hmm. looking to buy a franchise. And, you know, some of these brands are very famous names, like McDonald's, who you've mentioned on
sure.
show on numerous occasions. We have Subway. I just found out, Dr. Tantillo, Subway's up to about 40,000 units now. If you can imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
a great brand. I eat their sandwiches constantly.
They're
really
fantastic,
good. They're very,
aren't
very,
they?
Very good.
I mean,
I love
they're
it.
Really the experts on franchising, I think. And, you know, you have other famous brands. You have your Pizza Hut. You have your Dunkin' Donuts.
Sure.
And then there's some other brand names that are not as well known. You know,
sure.
I've had the opportunity to interview them because there's so many. Like, for example, you have Submarina, which is a sub-franchise. And you have Cafe a la Carte, which is a coffee franchise. And
sure.
You have Arizona Pizza. And so you compare Arizona Pizza.
I love that. That one. Well, how is that ever going to sell in New York? Arizona pizza.
Well, exactly, right? So, you know, it's interesting, you know, when
yeah.
you compare the brand names and you see some are, you know, very famous and some are not so famous. So just because the brand names aren't as popular, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't consider them
I agree because what you want, what as the brand goes, so does your investment go up.
Absolutely.
So that's really the secret. But you know what I want to get into, Marty, and please call me John. I mean, I appreciate that. I appreciate the title, but I'm going to call you Marty, and
absolutely,
you're going to call me John. It's this idea that if I'm a corporate guy, and I found out with my corporate friends that, you know, had been furloughed and they tried to start their own business.
Yeah.
It's not good for them to be entrepreneurs. I think that the perfect, if I could step on your I think former corporate types would do very well as franchisees, better than the run-of-the-mill kind of person, although they're fine, because they know systems and they understand the systems. That when you take an executive out of that, out of Fortune 500 land, they don't know how to do it. Why don't you respond to that?
You're absolutely right. I love what you just said. You know, it's true. Entrepreneurs are typically drawn to franchising, and I think that could be a very bad thing, because entrepreneurs, you know, and I've been studying them, John, for, you know, many years now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're typically very creative people. You know, I kind of like compare them to like an artist. They like to reinvent the wheel, you know?
Yeah.
And there's a great saying, I don't know if you've ever heard it before, but they say you can't paint the golden arches green. Of course,
I'm going to steal that, Marty.
Steal it, because I loved it, and I knew you'd love that when you heard it. You know, of course, mm-hmm. we're referring to
McDonald's. Sure.
You know, but there's probably some nut out there, some nut entrepreneur that thinks that the golden arches will look better in green. And, you know, how much do you think that those golden arches are worth today? I don't know what the price value on those golden arches are, but it's it's pretty high up there. I agree with what you just said about, you know, people in the business community. I think if you can understand what a system is or a method
exactly
of doing things, franchising can work very well for you.
Yes. Yeah, well, I have this surrogate son. His name is Patrick.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I'm not going to tell too many tales out of school here, but he has difficulty focusing.
Mm-hmm.
He was always an ADD person.
Yeah.
But I think that the rote of a franchise would be so much better for him. And, but although he has this entrepreneurial kind of gene there, for him, at least in the beginning, to learn how to do it. Okay, but on the other hand, the problem is that nobody's going to tell me what I'm going to do it my own way,
right.
Where the corporate guys and gals, they understand the drill.
I agree with you. You know, it's interesting. You know, when we were talking earlier about the different brands, John, you know, I mean, of course, you got your big brands and you got your smaller brands. I found that sometimes with the smaller brands, there's a little more, let's say, flexibility. You know, where as opposed to, you know, with a McDonald's or a Subway, again, both very successful companies, there's not much flexibility with those franchise systems. I mean, there's no room for entrepreneurship or creativity.
Right.
You know?
And you have to go to university.
Exactly.
And you've got to be interviewed. And you don't have to be interviewed. Your family's got to be interviewed.
Exactly.
Nobody realizes this.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, this is no day at the beach. Oh, I'm going to open up a franchise, a McDonald's franchise. Oh, yeah. Good luck.
Absolutely. So, I mean, that situation that you've given, you know, with your surrogate son, I totally agree that there's probably some franchise systems out there that would be a great match for his personality type. You know, you were talking about corporate guys. I got to interview one of the top franchisees for a franchise. I don't know if you've ever heard of them. They're called Liberty Tax franchise. And I think you have them in New York. I mean, H&R Block is, of course, the most popular. But this gentleman, his name was Dan Castellini, and he said something very interesting, because I said, you know, how did you become the most successful franchisee to Liberty Tax? And he said something interesting. He says, I'm not creative. I didn't want to invent anything. All I wanted to do
was to follow the system. I just did what they told me to do, and I became the top franchisee.
I love it.
And that's franchising in a nutshell.
It certainly is. It certainly is. Well, let me ask you, Marty, what is the hottest franchises, the brand names? And then I'm going to ask, answer that. What's the hottest franchises these days? And maybe not some brand names that we don't know, and maybe what category they're in.
It's interesting. Again, of course, you don't want to hear Subway. I mean, Subway is still actually in the top. I still think
sure.
that they're in the top 10. Dunkin' Donuts is in there.
My
McDonald's
favorite.
McDonald's is
yeah.
in there, of course. So, of course, your big-name franchises. Entrepreneur has, like, a top 500 that
right.
usually come out
right.
every year, you know. Oh. And, you know, usually do see, a lot of, like, the top names in there. But I don't think that those franchises are certainly for everyone.
Sure.
You know?
Because they're very, very, very strict and very doctrinaire on their procedures.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. You
yeah.
know, so, you know, I'm still a fan of, you know, some of like these small and growing franchises. I don't know if you know this, John, but Dave Thomas was one of the very first franchises to KFC. I think he was like the second.
Yes, I think I remember seeing that. And let me just get this in. You're listening to WVOX, Brand Talks, Go Brand Yourself. And we have my guest today, Marty McDermott, who is the president of Franchise Interviews. How can we get in touch with you, by the way?
Very easy. Go to www.franchiseinterviews.com.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, very easy, and I think we have about 350 different interviews.
I love it.
On
okay.
website now, John. Yeah, so it's a very informative. It's similar to your show. You know, I like to think of it as being educational. When we started
absolutely.
The show, it's the teacher in us, right?
It's yes.
Like, we
yes.
like to teach at the same time.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
you know what they always said, with Tantillo, you laugh and learn. So, that's what we like to try to do. But in the last few minutes here, what franchise category is hot?
Wow. You know, I was interviewed back in... I think it was 1999 or 2000, and I got asked the same question, and I was lucky enough to get it right. And I think it still applies today, is I still like the senior care industry.
Very
and
interesting.
It
senior
is.
Care.
When I'm talking about senior care, I'm talking about like more like non-medical.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, okay. So
yeah.
My dad, who has Parkinson's disease, you know, he... You know, we had to have someone come in a lot, you know,
sure.
and kind of like spend time with them and help them and things like that. But it's amazing that industry still seems to grow today because people, of course, are living longer.
And there are many of us, that's the baby boomers. They're,
exactly.
So
you know, they don't
want
to go to nursing homes,
that's
you know.
Right. That's right.
But what's interesting about your question, John, is that there's a lot of like different categories kind of like expanding on the non-medical senior care industry.
Sure.
Like, for example, there's one company I recently interviewed. They're called AmRamp. And what they do is they'll come to your home and they'll create a ramp. Like for example,
I love it.
Yeah, my dad was having trouble walking, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, for him to get down the stairs,
yeah.
even if it was two stairs, they'd create this ramp for you. And you just kind of slide down the wheelchair and you're able to, you know, become more portable, you know, and get around from point A to point B. So I'm noticing that there's a lot of new, I guess you could say, subcategories basing themselves off of the non-medical senior care industry. So I still like that industry just because
mm-hmm.
I think you get to do something good and, you know, still make a nice amount of money at the same time.
Right.
So I'm still a big fan of that industry. The children's category is still growing, you know, with the mommy and daddy, of course, working today and things
sure,
like that.
Sure, sure. So child
but there's
care.
There's 80
yeah.
industries out there. And, you know, it's your question is the marketing professor in you is really very important. You know, is the industry is very critical, you know, and we talk about, you know, the SWOT analysis, don't we, you know,
right.
looking towards, you know, the opportunities and the...
Yeah, could you explain what a SWOT analysis is?
Absolutely. I do this all day.
Right.
SWOT
right.
is strengths,
weaknesses,
opportunities, and threats. So,
right.
you know, what opportunities are present to an industry, and what are some threats that are out there?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you know, you hit on the threats. you know, in branding, you always have to be branding. You always have to be reinventing. You always have to be rebranding yourself because of the changes in the marketplace. People change. And if you don't do that, guess what happens? You lose market share.
Well, the word I stole from you was brand over. I use that word all the time.
Well,
now,
I hope, yes. Oh, don't get me started
word,
about brand over with all
the
these all these affected people on television. Oh, you need a makeover.
Right.
You don't need a makeover. If you do a makeover in 3 days, you're going to be doing the same stuff.
Exactly.
You can't be. It's a brand over. What is it? Who are you? And based on who you are, then go do it. Go brand yourself. None of this nonsense. You know, it's like them telling me I should wear a straight tie, you know, or I should wear, I shouldn't wear striped shirts or polka dot ties. What the heck do you know about that?
Exactly.
Not you, Marty, but you know what I'm talking about. These people that give, you know, seldom right, never in doubt.
Well, it's very interesting. The story that made such an impression on me, you know, is of course, you know, your famous hat, you know.
Yes.
And to never take that thing off, Ben, because that is part of your character. It's part of your brand. So I remember them even saying once, you listening to one of your shows, saying on an interview, you know, would you take the hat off? And that is not your brand. I wouldn't even recognize you.
Well, right. Yeah, well, they wanted to do it but for good reason. They wanted me to be a psychologist, and I'm not a psychologist. And so that was not part of my brand. So this way I can get away. And the other thing about, and here we go, you're listening to WVOX 1460 on your AM dial. Marty McDermott, John Tantillo, we're doing Brand Talks, Go Brand Yourself, heard exclusively on WVOX. You know, I'm going to start talking about me, but it's not about me. It's the experiences that I have learned. Don't you do what I've done, and don't make the mistakes that I made. You know, when they tell you you should wear a straight tie because you're going to turn people off, guess what? When I went to that party and all the models said to me, "Where's your bow tie?" I wanted to kill myself.
I love that. It's such a great example. You know, it's interesting too, John. You know, because there's a lot of, you know, big name franchises. I was recently reading that, you know, KFC is doing a lot of rebranding right now. In fact, I can't remember what their new restaurant is called. I think they call it like what is it, KFC 11 or something like that. You know, we know, you and I, you know, we probably know KFC. I still think of it as
Kentucky Fried Chicken. Sure.
You know? And it's what the young kids out there, of course, you know, don't
what
know
are you,
it.
What are you kidding?
Yeah, it's still KFC.
Hey, Dad, what are you kidding?
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, when you buy into a franchise, you know, sometimes you have, you know, some very good marketing experts that, you know, they realize that it is time to do a brand over. We've seen a lot of brand overs with McDonald's over time, haven't we?
Sure, sure.
You know, and I know you've mentioned, you know, a bunch of them on the show. You know, I remember listening to one of your shows where they, you know, they came out with the nutritional content for their menu.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And I love it. It's terrific. And that's where the industry is going. And if you don't like it, don't look at it.
Absolutely.
You know, but for guys like me who have heart conditions, you got to worry about stuff like that. And it will stop you and prevent you from doing the wrong thing. I mean, when I looked at that pretzel burger from one of them, I you know, the salt content alone could kill you.
I know. It's
and
so
I mean,
true.
I love pretzels and I love hamburgers, but
same
you just
here.
Can't do that. Listen, Marty, it's always great to have you on the show.
Thank
we got to
so
do
much,
this
John.
In
I'm
another
such a
few weeks.
I'm a big fan of your show. I love your show, you know, and
well, we love you too.
We're gonna have you over the house for macaroni.
That's what. And you know what? And before you go, I'm gonna say give a shout out to my aunt, Pat Spencer, who this past weekend made homemade matakati, or I say matagots, they melted in your mouth. They were unbelievable. So anyway, Pat, we'll be over soon. Maybe we'll come on Marty and the family. Yeah.
That's true, exactly.
Okay, Marty, thanks
again. Thank you so much, John. You're great.
Thank you
so much.
Thanks again.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Okay.
Franchise interviews from Easton, Pennsylvania to Sydney, Australia. You're listening to Franchise Interviews. Franchise Interviews.